Welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Vitelli, senior editor of Energy in the Americas for InfraLogic. Thank you for tuning in. Our guest today is Kevin Smith, CEO of Arivon Energy. Kevin, thank you for joining the podcast.
Thanks, Andrew. A pleasure to be here.
So, Kevin, people who are active in the renewable energy space are very familiar with your firm. But for the rest of our listeners, can you tell me about Arivon and how the firm came to be both an independent company and one of the most active investors in the renewable energy space?
Thanks, Andrew. Arivon really, it has only been active in the space as an independent company for, you know, just about 5 years or so, maybe a bit under 5 years or so. Originally, you know, the predecessor company, there was a group called Capital Dynamics, was more acquisition of operating assets, had a number of funds and big investors. In 2021, three big investors decided to form Arivon as an independent standalone entity. So they pulled out a couple gigawatts of assets and a portion of the team, and they kind of reformed into Arivon Energy as 100% standalone. We have three big investors, CalSTRS, a Netherlands-based pension fund called APG, and Abu Dhabi Investment Authority. So starting in 2021, then they kind of ramped up that business into its own standalone entity, you know, full greenfield development capabilities. So rather than acquiring operating assets, we're taking projects kind of full development scale from, you know, greenfield activities into commercial operations. And we have a long-term ownership position. That's our agenda, is to own and operate these facilities long-term. Right now, we've got about just over 4 gigawatts in operation. We've got about 1.5 gigawatts in construction right now. And over the last 18 months, we've closed more than $3 billion in new projects. Our focus is exclusively on solar plus storage and standalone battery storage. We are looking at some other parts of the business and other technologies. But when you look at our development pipeline, which is about 6 gigawatts plus and growing, and you look at our operating and construction project, it's limited to that solar plus energy storage and utility scale battery storage activity. We've had a really good run over the last couple of years. A lot of new projects going into construction. We're active in the West, in California, in WEC, in MISO. We've got a number of projects in construction. So we're really excited about continuing to move forward.
And Kevin, you've been with the firm about 18 months, if I'm doing the math correctly. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background before joining Arivon?
Yeah, I took over here as CEO in August of 2023. So that's just over 18 months ago. Prior to that, I was CEO of the Americas, which was US and Latin America for Lightsource BP. There we kind of ramped up and built, you know, 3 or 4 gigawatts in projects as well. My background has been exclusively in the energy industry for 40 years, I'll say, maybe a little longer. The last 20 or so has been in renewable energy, large-scale wind. I headed up Invenergy in the early days when we branched into the wind industry from natural gas, and then have moved into solar in 2008. So a lot of solar and energy storage activities over the last 15 years or so.
So it sounds like you have a lot of experience both in the renewable part of the energy industry and before that in traditional energy.
Yeah, I mean, and it's an interesting perspective. In the first half of my career, as I say, I was, the renewable energy industry wasn't really very cost competitive or really much of a player, you know, back in the, we'll say in the 90s and early 2000s. So being in the energy industry, it was primarily conventional energy. I did nuclear energy design, nuclear facility design, power design, and early in my career right out of college, and then developed a lot of natural gas projects, both in the US and internationally. And so that gives me a pretty good understanding of, you know, what it takes to develop a natural gas-fired facility, what the economics look like, what the cost structures, power contracts look like, and then be able to kind of cost compare and, you know, terms and conditions compare to how renewable energy projects are structured and costed out.
Well, very interesting. Now, if you're an InfraLogic subscriber, you'll recall having read recently that Arivon closed a $258 million financing package on a large battery project in San Diego. Kevin, I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about that project and also what it was like getting a deal like that done in the current uncertain environment for renewables.
The Peregrine project is an interesting project. It's a 200 megawatt, 2 hour battery, really in downtown San Diego, just off the harbor. We're utilizing Tesla equipment. The Megapack equipment is really the state of the art, safest equipment as we move forward. And we put together a financing package. We're just finalizing the tax equity on that. Despite the uncertainty in the market, we still got very good reception on all aspects, the debt. We've got a pref equity investor as well as the tax equity. We've closed a number of transactions. We've got a huge project that we closed earlier in the year, late last year, the Elon projects. Elon 1 was closed in early 2024, and Elon 2 closed towards the end. But that project is about a $2 billion project in Kern County, California, which is a combination of solar and battery storage. So it's a total, both units is around 600 megawatts of solar and 300 megawatts of Megapack battery storage. So that's, like I said, that's around a $2 billion project with power sales to Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, LADWP. Those are just a few of the projects that we have. We've got about $1 billion of investment going in construction right now in Indiana, largely just solar based. So like I said, largely we're focusing on the solar markets and solar plus storage. And then we have a number of standalone storage projects moving forward along the coast in California.
So a lot of the conversations that we are having these days about the renewable sector have focused on the uncertainty, both when it comes to some of the ongoing secular trends, but especially political uncertainty when it comes to the future of the IRA, tariffs, and the like. How are you finding the environment both for developing renewables and for M&A deals?
If you look at the overview on the market, which is what gives us confidence, I mean, if you look in over the last several years, I mean, renewable energy really has dominated the landscape, and not really because of mandates within states about building renewable energy. It's really because renewable energy is extremely cost effective. Just in 2024, 90% of new generation built in 2024 was renewable energy. 80% of it was solar and battery storage. So solar dominated last year. 60% plus of new generation was solar in 2024. We expect that trend is going to continue in the future, largely because solar and energy storage are very cost competitive. If you look at the investment over the last couple of years, since the Inflation Reduction Act was passed, there's, you know, more than $250 billion of investments in the U.S. in new projects and manufacturing activities. So we see a huge amount of manufacturing activities continuing to progress in the U.S. Steel manufacturing for trackers, module supply activities. And what's interesting is almost 80% of that new investment is in Republican-leaning or Republican-voting states. It would be hard for me to see the current Congress, even though it's, you know, a heavy Republican bias, to take those jobs and that investment out of their own districts. So I think that's a fundamental issue that we see supporting kind of continued growth in the renewable energy industry, particularly in solar and battery storage. You know, I think the markets expect that as well. I mean, we're going to see some upsets. We're having to deal with some of the tariff issues, which is changing prices that we're offering to utilities and our corporate clients, which is ultimately going to change consumer prices are going to go up with those additional tariffs. So we're having to deal with those dynamics in the market. But, you know, we're still very bullish on seeing the renewable energy industry and solar and energy storage, particularly continuing to grow as we see the markets move forward.
So, Kevin, you're talking about being bullish in a time of uncertainty. Do you think that presents opportunities? Because some folks that I've spoken to have said that if you're willing to take a political view, this could be a good market for buyers when it comes to M&A opportunities in the renewable space.
Yeah, I'd fully agree with that. I mean, there is uncertainty. You know, uncertainty favors, to a certain extent, it favors some of the larger players that have, you know, strong funding investors, and we've got a really strong stable of investors. So that gives us staying power in the market. We can look at transactions. We're not pressed to do things to, you know, keep our revenue stack going. You know, we've got a nice operating base of projects with long-term power contracts. So we've got, you know, strong EBITDA and cash flow in the organization. So we can pick and choose what assets we want to look at. As you said, that uncertainty does cause problems with others that maybe have less committed investors into the market. And so we're certainly looking in the M&A sector more from a development assets, early stage, mid stage development assets. And so we're looking at over the next, year or two, a really good market for us on the M&A side as we see that uncertainty that not all firms can weather through.
Well, I'm sure Infralogic readers will be reading your firm's name a lot in the coming year and a half then.
Yeah, that's the expectations. I mean, we've got our own projects that we expect to continue to push into construction. We've got a big two-phase project in Missouri called Kelso, 450 megawatt DC project solar that we're looking to reach financial close in the near future. And we've just initiated a construction on that project. And we've got a number of other battery storage projects that we're pushing forward on. But then in addition, we also are looking in the M&A market, both individual projects, and we may find ourselves looking at a large portfolio opportunity here in the near future if that opportunity presents itself as a good fit for us.
Now, Kevin, you mentioned that right now Arivon is really focused on solar and batteries, but you also said that there might be the prospect for other types of investments. What kind of other technologies do you find interesting? Do you think might end up in your portfolio in the near future?
There's kind of maybe two parts to that question. What technologies do we find interesting? And maybe a completely different question of what technologies we may find in our portfolio in the near future. So I think for the near future, we're likely going to stay pretty focused on that solar and energy storage side. I mean, we're looking at, longer duration storage, which maybe is a subset of energy storage. Newer technologies, obviously there's all kinds of power generation technologies out there. There's, small modular nuclear reactors, there's carbon capture, there's green hydrogen, geothermal, all those. And we're monitoring those both on whether or not there's an interest for us to invest in some of those technologies, but also looking at making sure we're competitive against those kinds of technologies. There's a lot of discussions on a rebirth on the natural gas side of the business. That's not something that we or our investors would be looking to invest in, but we will be monitoring that to understand, how cost competitive natural gas is and how much of a player natural gas is as we look over the next several years.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we've talked a little bit about some of the political factors, but you also have the growth of AI, the need to build out data centers to support that. And everybody's talking about the power that will be needed to support that also. I mean, how is the power mix in America going to change in the coming years? And how does that affect your business?
Well, as I said, my view is renewables are still going to be the dominant force going forward. I mean, if you just look at what's happened over the last several years, and that's largely market-based, price-based demand. A lot of the states across the Midwest have been dominant renewable energy, despite the fact that they don't really have renewable energy mandates. Moving forward, we have the data center theoretical explosion of power demand that we're going to see. We see forecasts of from historically, 0.5% to 1% growth in energy and electricity demand. Now we're seeing in some markets 3, 4, 5, 6, 7% growth expectations, which is just unheard of in the markets over the last 20 to 30 years. And we're going to have to figure out a way as an industry to meet that demand. Certainly, there's going to be an increase, I'll say across the board. Natural gas will probably have a more significant role going forward than they have over the last few years. But developing a natural gas-fired project is, I'll say, more difficult than it is to develop a renewable energy project. It creates real pollution. So you have pushback from local communities. It has its land issues. It has equipment supply constraints for gas turbine technology that takes it out to 3-4 year delivery times. You've got to get firm transportation, if you're going to provide firm supply, and the gas pipelines are pretty much chocked full. It has water supply issues, which in drought areas is difficult to get water supply for cooling. So natural gas projects, I think, we're probably going to see a bit of an uptick, but they're not going to be a dominant force moving forward. I still believe it's going to be largely a solar and battery storage kind of market as we see over the next few years. Bit of an uptick in natural gas. Data centers, there's a lot of discussions about islanding off data centers so they get their own dedicated power supply. But those data centers have demands that they're looking for, 99.99% reliability. You're really only going to get that if they stay grid connected. So I think it's largely still going to be around power supply to the grid, allowing the utilities to look across their portfolio, which includes a mix of fossil fuel generation, nuclear, and renewables, and having them supply those data centers, you know, as opposed to a data center trying to put together a structure that provides them reliability with an off-grid solution, which, you know, I did that a lot in my career in international markets. Very, very difficult to provide a 99 plus percent, let alone 99.99 with an off-grid solution. So I think the vast majority of those data centers are going to have to be on-grid and allowing the utilities to provide them with that very reliable power supply that we enjoy here in the U.S.
What about nuclear? Can we see a little bit of a rebirth of nuclear providing some of that solution?
There's a lot of talk about small modular nuclear reactors. You know, I worked in nuclear early in my career. I think we have a very safe and well-performing nuclear fleet in the U.S. It's not very cost-effective right now to do that. It's probably at least double or triple what it would be to put in renewables. And I think siting issues, technology advancement, pricing structures, financing costs, other risks related to nuclear that you don't see in other technologies. In my view, we're not going to see substantial capacity from nuclear for, I'll say, at least a decade and probably longer. You're going to see pilot projects here and there that'll make a lot of great news. But I think if you're really looking at putting gigawatts onto the grid to help this boom with the data center market, I think that's at least a decade away or more.
Another big development we saw last year and maybe going a little bit into 2023 was the expansion of the tax credit market with the tax transfer and the hybrid market really emerging following the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act. And I think there were hopes that expansion could continue even further. I'm wondering if you're seeing a little bit of a pullback now or a little bit more hesitation now that there's a new administration and there could be a lower tax rate that could affect tax equity. There could be changes to the IRA. What are you seeing from the tax equity market?
We play in both, you know, I'll say conventional tax equity structures. The ELAN project that I talked about was a conventional tax equity structure with Wells Fargo. We're also very active in the tax credit transfer market with a number of big players. You know, a lot of household names are becoming more active in that. We continue to see pretty strong interest on both those, you know, in the tax equity markets. There are a few players that have been on the edge that maybe they drop out or maybe they drop in. But, you know, certainly uncertainty doesn't help the markets at all. But despite that, we're still seeing some pretty good interest in the market. We haven't had really too much problems in bringing in the necessary tax equity into our projects. And frankly, I kind of expect to see that in the future. We're just going to have to maintain flexibility. You know, if there is a change in the tax rates, if there are some changes in the credit structures, and we're just going to have to maintain some flexibility. And like I said, unfortunately, you know, that probably favors some of the bigger firms, you know, more than some of the smaller groups that have a little bit tighter funding structures. You know, that gives us the ability to plug some gaps with our own, you know, corporate funding structures if we have some delays or some uncertainty that we've got to deal with on the tax equity side. So, like I said, I think we've continued to see strong interest both in conventional tax equity structures deals with some of the main banks, as well as, you know, the corporates continuing to come into the tax credit transfer structures.
So, Kevin, you've expressed a lot of optimism. But I have to ask, as the CEO of a renewable energy company, what's the biggest thing that's keeping you up at night right now in these somewhat uncertain times?
Certainly, I think tariffs are a big issue, you know, not just from our business, but also, you know, kind of general health of the economy. I mean, we're seeing the stock market drop 500, 600, 700 points in one day, up 200 the next, down 500, 600 the next day, you know, so you know, I think everybody's stock portfolio is down over the last few months where it was. And I think tariffs are going to have a big impact on that. It's affecting our businesses. I mean, you know, we're seeing projects now where we're having to, you know, we're bidding into utilities and now we're kind of having to pass through some of that tariff exposure. That's going to raise electricity prices across the board. And so I think probably the tariff side of it is one of the bigger worries. You know, changes to the tax credit structure largely are going to take Congress to make anything that's kind of certainly moving forward on bonus credits will take congressional action. And like I said, there's a whole lot of support that's been put into Republican districts. So we're hoping that they listen to their constituents and recognize that those projects are creating a lot of jobs and a lot of investment in Republican districts across the U.S. But I think that the tariff issues are pretty worrying. And obviously, we're hearing about it every 15 minutes in the news. It's raising the prices on everyday goods and services, and it's going to affect the electricity markets as well. And so we're going to see increases in prices where we're going to have to pay more for our goods coming into the U.S. And even if we're buying, you know, most of our projects are utilizing 100% U.S. steel. But if you put a tariff on steel imports into the U.S., then the U.S. suppliers are going to raise their prices up to those tariff levels. So even if we're a dedicated U.S. consumer, which for the most part, we're trying to maintain that position, it's still going to raise the prices of U.S. manufactured goods, because the norm is for those U.S. suppliers to raise their prices to the competition. And if the competition is international and it has to deal with tariffs, then the U.S. suppliers will raise their prices as well. So that's probably one of the number one issues for us is how do we manage that tariff market? You know, tariffs on Canada and Mexico are on one day, off the next, now back on. You know, the auto manufacturers just got a 30-day reprieve, but, you know, who knows what it'll be in the future. So I think that is adding a lot of uncertainty, not just to energy markets, but, you know, to everybody, you know, everyday Americans across the board.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you for coming on the podcast.
Of course. My pleasure. Thanks, Andrew. And I appreciate the insightful questions. And it's going to be an interesting market going forward. So, you know, as they say, buckle up.
It definitely will. There's never a lack of things to talk about here on Crossroads, and certainly not now. And thank you, listeners, for tuning into Crossroads. If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast player, and please give us a 5-star rating so others can find our podcast. Until next time, this has been Crossroads.